This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson.
Can I help you?
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Marilyn Miller, and I'm here with Lane Kaplan-Levinson. We're interested in being admitted to the facilities to do a story on the enemy alien internment camp here in the 1940s.
All right, hold on a second, please.
Thank you.
This is about the time when the guy over the loudspeaker at the U.S. Border Patrol office in Algiers is going, "What the?" We wait outside as the gate opens for an employee, and definitely not for us.
Ma'am?
Yes, sir.
I was told to let you know that our media person is not here today. You would have to call and set up an appointment and just ask for Agent Rivette.
Okay, calling Agent Rivette, operations officer for the U.S. Border Patrol office in Algiers. What happens there at the facility today?
The facility currently functions as a headquarters component for the New Orleans Sector Border Patrol.
The entire Gulf Coast arm of the U.S. Border Patrol is managed out of that site.
The day you and Marilyn showed up, I was actually out of the office.
Marilyn is Marilyn Miller, an associate professor of Caribbean and Latin American studies at Tulane University. She and I went over there because we were actually more interested in how this U.S. Border Patrol facility, right on the river in Algiers, was used during World War II, when it was Camp Algiers. But Agent Rivette didn't know about that part of the facility's history. He had heard about an even earlier use of the compound.
We've always been told here that the history of the facility was used as an embarkation facility. The immigrant ships would come upriver, pull over dockside, and then the inspectors would go out and they would look for diseases on board the vessels and all for quarantine purposes.
That's how the facility was used in the 1800s when lots of immigrants were coming in. But what about World War II?
I've spoken with many people on the facility, and we've only heard the story that I've told you. That's the story that we all know. But as far as some sort of camp, I've never heard that story.
Not many people have. When you think of World War II internment camps, you think of Japanese Americans detained after Pearl Harbor. Over 100,000 people of Japanese descent were detained after that attack, the majority of them U.S. citizens. The Camp Algiers story is part of a much smaller government internment program, but one often overlooked. Not by Marilyn Miller, who's studying the history of this Border Patrol Center on the river.
All of these buildings would have been part of a facility which was used in the 1940s to house enemy aliens who arrived to New Orleans from countries from Latin America.
Let's start on December 7th, 1941.
A date which will live in infamy.
Pearl Harbor. The FDR administration becomes increasingly concerned that in addition to Western Europe and Japan, there might be a third Axis front, Latin America.
Where more than 1.5 million Germans lived. Some of them might be Nazi agitators, even saboteurs and spies, who could conceivably rise up and overthrow governments and open up another front.
This is Max Paul Friedman, a history professor at American University and an expert on the Latin American deportation operation during World War II.
The Roosevelt administration, they asked FBI agents to go and find the dangerous Nazis in Latin America. But they weren't sending the best people because the best people were busy where the war really was or in security at home. So they sent people without Spanish or German or a lot of talent, and they were supposed to find Nazis in Latin America. And what they did in most countries was, you know, what you would imagine, open their wallets and offer to pay for information for anybody who would denounce a Nazi. And that created a system that was riven with corruption, where some of the Latin American dictators would say, "Oh, you want Nazis? This guy who owns a farm next to my farm, he's a Nazi." And they would deport some of their own residents in order to seize their property.
It sounds crazy. The U.S. government sending D-string FBI agents to find Nazis in Latin America, kidnap them, and bring them to America? But it's true. Just days after Pearl Harbor, thousands of Europeans who had moved to Latin America were rounded up and eventually deported to New Orleans. Here's Marilyn again.
When they came to the United States then, they were stripped of their documents, as they were stripped of their clothing. So they were treated in a way as if they were, in fact, prisoners, even though they had done nothing.
The secretive program, called the Enemy Alien Control Program, was run by the State Department and was in many ways illegal. It was against the law at that time for the U.S. to seize individuals outside the U.S. So the State Department decided they would get around this by refusing to issue entry visas for the Latin American deportees. When the Latin American residents arrived to the port of New Orleans without papers, they were denied visas. Then they were arrested on the grounds that they had attempted to enter the country illegally and were therefore subject to internment.
My name is Nancy Carolina Cortez Reymold.
I Skyped with Nancy from Honduras. When she was researching her family history, she came across these camps.
So my grandfather came up to this list. Mr. Fritz Reinbold.
Fritz Reinbold. Nancy's grandpa Fritz was born in Germany, but left before the war to live in Honduras, where he met and married Nancy's grandma.
He said that it was probably because he was rich. That was his only mistake.
Fritz was a clerk at the German embassy. He's one example of someone who was framed as a Nazi so that he would be forced to give up his property and assets to the Honduran government. He and his family were put on a ship to New Orleans in 1943. Nancy's mother was 11 months old.
I don't know how many days or weeks they spent there, but New Orleans was the point of delivery.
Every Latin American internee first arrived in New Orleans and was then shipped off to one of the other camps. Nancy's family was put on a train to Crystal City in Texas.
My grandfather never in his life talked about this. This is unforgivable. I cannot imagine how they felt. They took away everything.
Nancy knew her mom spent her first few years of her life in Texas, but never knew why. She discovered her family's experience on the German-American Internee Coalition website and saw that they were amongst 5,000 Europeans with a similar story. Not only were many of these people who were rounded up between 1941 and 1943 innocent, some of them were the actual victims of the war.
Approximately 81 Jews in various countries were rounded up.
This is Harvey Strum, a faculty member at the Sage College of Albany. I didn't think I could have possibly heard right when I was talking to Harvey. In search for Nazis, the United States deported and interned Jews?
Correct.
You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson.
The great irony is that many of these quote-unquote enemy aliens, some small percentage of them were European Jews who had gone to Latin America when they were denied a visa to enter the United States for refuge. At least five of them had already been in concentration camps in Europe.
So you amazingly managed to escape from a concentration camp, try to enter the United States, are denied entry, so you go to Latin America instead, and are then kidnapped and sent to the U.S. only to once again live behind barbed wire.
And in some cases, they faced harassment and even beatings at the hands of real Nazis in the camps.
The U.S. camps. Because of the faulty accusations of so many deportees, a majority had no affiliation with the party. But there were still a good number of Nazi sympathizers who were also sent to those same camps. And Marilyn says they were pretty much allowed to do whatever they wanted.
Because the United States wanted to protect the health and welfare of their own prisoners of war in Europe, they were very careful to provide good treatment to German prisoners of war here. And so they were allowed to fly the swastika flag, or they were allowed to sing, you know, Nazi songs.
Which led to severe discrimination and beatings of Jews. The Jewish detainees in various camps across Oklahoma, Texas, Georgia demanded they have their own camp, a safe space where they wouldn't need to share a bunk bed with a Nazi, literally. There was additional pressure on the camps to do something because the National Refugee Service and various Jewish organizations got wind of what was happening and supported the demand that the Jews be moved. It also helped that camp administrators were starting to see the absurdity of the situation. Here's Max.
Camp commanders started writing to Washington saying, "I thought we were going to be housing and guarding dangerous Nazis, and you're sending us whole families and old men and Spanish speakers and children, and we don't understand."
So officials decided that one of the camps would be used specifically to house those who opposed the Nazis. This is where Camp Algiers comes in, what's now the U.S. Border Patrol facility on the West Bank. Marilyn explains.
When there were problems in other camps elsewhere in the United States, we have news stories from the Jewish Telegraphic Service that says Nazis and Jews fight in Camp X. And as a result of that, many times the Jews were sent to the Algiers facility as a refuge from this fighting. So New Orleans became known as the Camp of the Innocents.
Basically, when the U.S. realized they had messed up and had innocent people and Jews locked up, they decided to put them all in one place to escape the harassment they were experiencing in the other camps. Starting in 1942, the 81 Jews and other innocent prisoners held in camps from Texas to Oklahoma were relocated to New Orleans. What life was like in Camp Algiers on the next Tripod. Tripod is a production of WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio, in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midloe Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered. Of course, you can hear Tripod anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Write it a review. It will make everyone happy. It will make me so happy. You can also follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Tripod NOLA. Don't forget to listen back next week to part two of this series, part two on Camp Algiers. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson, and
I'm Marilyn Miller, and I'll Tripod you later.